Merry Christmas. This is the Christian's Hour broadcast.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare Him room. And heaven and nature
and sing. Heaven and nature sing.
And heaven and nature sing.
And heaven and nature sing.
It's Christmas time, and on today's program, Gene Apple from the East Side Christian Church in Southern California will speak to us about one of the colors of Christmas. Here's Gene Apple.
For many, many people, Christmas is a blue season of the year for them. And I've always thought about December. It's kind of the great multiplier in our lives. If things are good in your life right now, then December just multiplies that. But if things are bad, December multiplies that. Many of you know that Barbara and I, we got married in 1993, but we both went through painful divorces back in the 80s through some very similar circumstances. And I was a pastor in Las Vegas at the time. Some of you have heard me tell my story about this before, but many of you haven't. And I'll never forget my first Christmas alone again. And it was a blue Christmas. We'd finished our Christmas Eve services in Vegas, and my intent was I was going to go grab something to eat at a drive-thru, go home, do some laundry and pack. And then Christmas morning, I was flying to the Midwest to spend Christmas Day with 20 members of my family. And I got away from the church that night about 9:30, and I hadn't eaten since the middle of the day, since a sandwich. I was starving. So I drove down the street. There was a little chicken drive-thru place, but they were closed. And I thought, no problem. I'll go next door, you know, Taco Bell. Taco Bell was closed. And I thought, what am I going to do? So I drove a little further to Jack in the Box, and Jack in the Box was closed. And I thought, well, I'll go to my supermarket. My supermarket's open 24 hours a day. I'll go to the deli there, and went to my supermarket. My supermarket was closed. I had never seen Las Vegas, the city that never sleeps, so quiet. And now I'm starting to feel sorry for myself. You know, I'm starting to have a little pity party. It's Christmas Eve. I'm all by myself, driving around, thinking about how the family I grew up in, we always kind of celebrated Christmas Eve, thinking about families in their homes around the tree right now, you know. And it was an unusually cold and windy night in Las Vegas, but I was determined to find something to eat. So I drove out to the east edge of Las Vegas. There's a country western themed casino there called Sam's Town. And to my, it sounds like too many of you know where it is. And to my surprise, when I pulled up, the place was hopping. Parking lot was full. I went in and people were playing the slot machines and the table games and video poker machines. And I went up to the second story. There was a 50-style diner, Mary's Diner. Sat down at a table for four all by myself and ordered the blue plate special. And it was like a bad dream. I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe it. I just spoke for thousands of people, and here I am at Sam's Town on Christmas Eve eating meatloaf and mashed potatoes and gravy alone. And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, somebody put a quarter in the jukebox, and Elvis started singing another sad song in my ear. Are you lonesome tonight? Absolutely true. And your sympathy is very meaningful to me, by the way. Well, I started laughing, probably to keep from crying, and the thought that just overwhelmed me was, Gene, you know, here you are, one of the most blessed guys in the world. You got a church family that loves you and has stood with you through thick and thin. You got more friends than should be legally allowed to have. You're flying home in the morning to spend Christmas Day with 20 members of your family. And if you, of all people, can be lonely tonight, imagine how difficult this night is for those who don't have anybody. Again, all these people playing all the games, it was jammed. It was like the Holy Spirit just sent a dart right into my soul that said, hey, they don't have anywhere else to go tonight either. Why else would they be here on Christmas Eve? Maybe in one way or another, a blue Christmas describes what's ahead of you in the next few days. Maybe for you it's distance. It's loved ones that live in another part of the country or in another part of the world. And the thought of not being with them this Christmas is just unbearable for you. For some of you, you thought this would be the Christmas that you'd finally have a baby around the Christmas tree, and yet there was a miscarriage, or there was a infertility issues, or a adoption that fell through at the last minute, and it has just caused a grief in you that others don't even understand your sense of loss. Maybe some of you are experiencing in a Christmas like Barbara and I experienced years ago. And Christmas for you is going to be filled with pain and tension and dealing with the ex and kids opening presents and two different houses. And or maybe for you this year is going to be an empty chair. You buried a mom or a dad or someone you loved very much this year. And the grief and the sense of emptiness, you know, it's just not going to be the same. You know, the very first Christmas in many ways was blue. It wasn't holly jolly Christmas for Mary and Joseph. We see all these quaint, peaceful images, you know, of Christmas cards. But the truth is, they were under significant physical, emotional, and relational stress. You've got a poor couple having a baby out of wedlock, traveling 80 miles by foot when she's 9 months pregnant, to have a baby that's born in a barn. You know, we sing, you know, the cattle are lowing, the baby awakes. I want you to think about that. There are cattle in the birthing room, okay? I mean, that's a biohazard right there, right? And when King Herod hears that another king has been born, he goes ballistic, and he immediately orders the murder of every young boy in the region, 2 years old and younger. And so there was so much grief going on. Mary and Joseph have to escape for their lives to Egypt. And so the first Christmas was definitely a blue Christmas. 700 years before Jesus was born, the prophet Isaiah described the one who was to come, the one who would be born in Bethlehem, the one who would rescue us from our blue Christmas. And in Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 through 8, it says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." For those of you who are going through a blue Christmas this year, this is what you need. You need Jesus to be your wonderful counselor, your mighty God, your everlasting Father, your Prince of Peace. And you need to draw close to him. You say, how do I draw close to him? James, the brother of Jesus, gave you some words that I think are just for you today. He said, draw close to God, and God will draw close to you. Let's all say that together at every campus. Just say this with me. Draw close to God, and God will draw close to you. One of my favorite verses is Psalm 34, 18, that says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit." You see, when you draw close to God, do you know what you discover? You discover that God is already close to you. He's already there. And whatever you're going through right now, whatever has you blue this Christmas, if you draw close to God, then Jesus will be all that you need him to be in the midst of your darkness and in the midst of your distress. Some of you need to draw close to Jesus right now to be your wonderful counselor. Counselor means trusted advisor. Counselor is someone who is by your side to guide you, to direct you, to help you figure out what you should do. Wouldn't it be great to have Jesus just like available on speed dial 24/7 as your counselor? Now, for those of you who want to love and support someone who's going to have a blue Christmas this year, I want you to notice the Bible does not refer to you as Jesus' backup counselor. For some reason, many of us feel that we have to counsel people who are in a blue season in their life, and sometimes with good intentions, we say some things that are at best insensitive, and sometimes just outright stupid or even painful to them. "Well, I guess God needed him more than you do." Really? Or whenever God closes a door, you know, he opens a window. Whatever that means. "You'll grow through this. You'll become a better person because of this." Well, at least he went quickly. You know, some guys his age, they have heart attacks and they live afterwards and they're just never the same. You know, at least he went fast. Really? Friends, wisdom like that may meet our own need to feel like we've got to say something profound and counsel somebody. It seldom meets the need of the person who's in sorrow. You want to know what kind of words people need to hear when they experience loss? I'll tell you. They just need you to walk into the room, throw your arms around their freshly broken heart, and just say, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." In fact, the Bible makes this very simple for us. It just advises us in Romans chapter 12 to mourn with those who mourn. It does not say to give counsel to those who mourn. It does not say to give a theological explanation to them about why God allows tragedy to happen in that moment. It does not say to tell them to snap out of it. It just says simply mourn with those who are mourning. Some of you just need to go to somebody today and say, "I am so sorry, and I want you to know I'm just thinking about you." Or you need to call somebody and you need to say, "Hey, you're on my mind and I'm here for you. I love you." You say, well, what do I do when they ask me the question, why? Why would God allow this to happen? Sometimes the most profound words you can just say are the simple, true ones. Just say, "I don't know. I don't know why God allowed this to happen, but I do know this. He cares, and he loves you." Most of the time, you don't have to say anything, to be honest with you. Just being there, just showing up, just giving a hug. That's what people need in those moments. There are so many different voices to listen to, aren't there, when we're blue? We can listen to our friends, our family, TV talk shows, magazine articles, Google, the list goes on and on, you know. But to draw close to Jesus as my wonderful counselor means to make a personal decision that I'm going to say, "Jesus, from now on, I'm going to listen to you about what matters. I'm going to listen to you, Jesus, about what you should say I should do and what I don't do." And I need to say something right here, and I just want to say it. I want to come alongside to you as gently as I can as a friend, but it's something that needs to be said. Many of us feel the way we feel right now, and many of us are in the situations that we're in right now because we didn't listen to Jesus as our wonderful counselor. We listened to ourselves, we listened to something else, someone else about how to live, and I know that's not true across the board, but so many times in my life, I ended up where I ended up because I didn't listen to the wonderful counselor in the first place. But Jesus is a counselor whose advice you can trust 100% of the time. He's never steered anybody wrong. He always has your best interest at heart. He says in his word, "Ask for wisdom and I will give it." And today, whatever is making you blue this Christmas, I want to encourage you to go to him and say, "Jesus, I'm struggling. I'm struggling in my career. So I give my career to you. Tell me what to do and I will do it. Jesus, I'm struggling in my relationships. I give my relationships to you. Tell me what to do and I will do it. Jesus, I'm struggling in my finances. So I give my finances to you. Tell me what to do and I will do what you ask me to do." Draw close to the wonderful counselor and he will draw close to you. And this Christmas, we can also draw close to Jesus because he's our mighty God. That little baby who became flesh in Bethlehem grew up to express the fullness of God's amazing power. It's kind of like the genie from Disney's Aladdin, you know, immense universal power, itty bitty living space. You may want to pray to the 8-pound, 6-ounce Lord baby Jesus like Ricky Bobby did in Talladega Nights. That's fine, but I want you to know that 8-pound, 6-ounce Lord baby Jesus, he is the mighty God, and he has the power to do more than just counsel and advise. Throughout Jesus' life, people would draw close to him to find power. He had the power to overcome sickness and disease. He had the power to overcome spiritual oppression and demonic influence. He had the power to overcome confusion and loneliness and despair. He had the power to fix and heal what is broken. He had so much power that one time he was in a crowd of people, and a woman who was ill reached out and just touched the hem of his garment, and she was healed. You name it, and people would draw close to Jesus, and people would find power over whatever they were dealing with. The scripture says this, and this is a very important verse, I think, at Christmas time to remember, Philippians 4, chapter 6. Don't worry. Don't worry about anything. Instead, what? Pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for what he has done. The most foundational, the most basic principle for getting help for your blue Christmas is this. You need to turn your worry into prayer. You see, worry is that inner monologue we have that says, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? We can draw close to God, and we can change that inner monologue from what am I going to do to a dialogue that says, God, do what only you can do. Do what only you can do. Maybe you're in a situation right now where you need to call on the mighty God. God, help me relationally. Help me financially. Help me emotionally, whatever is going on. I wonder if what has you down this Christmas is something about which you've done all you can do. Maybe you've given it all you've got, and deep down you know without God doing what he can do, there's no hope. Change your inner dialogue, that monologue you say, from worry to a dialogue of prayer. Instead of saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Say, God, do what only you can do. If you do that, you will be drawing close to the mighty God who is close to you. Jesus is our wonderful counselor. He's our mighty God who unleashes his power in our world. And he is the everlasting Father. And some of you say, well, I'm confused. I thought Jesus was the Son. And now you're telling me he's the Father? Like, which is it? That doesn't make sense. I mean, I think that way too. Jesus being called Everlasting Father here is a reference to the fact that Jesus provides what a good father provides. It doesn't mean he gives everything we want. It doesn't mean that he gives everything we ask for. It doesn't mean that he's our celestial Santa Claus in the sky giving us our wish list for everything that we want. Fathers, good fathers anyway, give their kids what they need. In his book, The Dance of Hope, Bill Fry tells about a student, a blind student named John, who he tutored at the University of Colorado. And one day, Bill asked John how he'd become blind, and John told him about a horrible accident when he was a teenager that took his sight. But it didn't only just take his sight, but it also took his hope, he said. And he told Bill, he said, I was bitter, and he said, I was angry with God for letting it happen, and I took out my anger on everyone around me. He said, I felt that since I had no future, I wouldn't lift a finger on my own behalf, let others wait on me. I shut my bedroom door and refused to come out except for meals. And the story surprised Bill because obviously a change had occurred in John. He didn't display any bitterness. He didn't display any anger. And he asked him why. And John traced it back to his challenge from his father. The dad was tired of his pity party, wanted him to get on with life, and he reminded the boy of the impending winter that was coming, and he wanted him to mount the storm windows on their home. They lived in a winter storm area. He said, do the work before I get home or else. And his dad went out of the house and slammed the door. Well, John reacted with anger, muttering and cursing at his dad all the way to the garage. You know, he found the windows, he found the stepladder, he found the tools, and he went to work. And he just was muttering, they'll be sorry when I fall off the ladder and break my neck. But he didn't fall. Little by little, he groped his way around the house. He got all the storm windows on and finished the job. And the assignment achieved his dad's goal. John reluctantly realized that he could still work, and he began to reconstruct his life. Years later, he learned something else about that day, not about himself, but about his father. And we shared it with Bill. His blind eyes started to tear up. And he said, I later discovered that no time during that day had my dad ever been more than 4 or 5 feet from my side. Because he had a father who had no intention of letting him fall. I want you to know you have an everlasting father. He has no intention of letting you fall. He's always close. He's closer than you think. He is close right now. Draw close to the everlasting Father. He will draw close to you. He will. Finally, in our darkest and most difficult days this Christmas, we can draw close to Jesus as our Prince of Peace. The term prince here doesn't mean that like Jesus is second in line for the throne like Prince Harry or Prince William or something like that, and he'll be waiting to be king someday. It means he's first. He is principal. He is in charge of peace. Peace here is the word that the Jews use, shalom. It's not an absence of conflict, but it's about goodness. It's about wholeness. It's about having that kind of peace that the Bible talks about that passes understanding. It's a peace that's in spite of our circumstances. Gerald Sitzer was in a car accident, and he was hit by a drunk driver in his minivan. And in that accident, he lost 3 generations in his family. He lost his mother, he lost his wife, and he lost his young daughter. And he was not hurt. He's written a book about going through his grief and finding peace. And I love the title of the book. It's called A Grace Disguised. And here's what he says. The experience of loss does not need to be the defining moment of our story. Now, it's one thing for me to say that, but it's a far another thing for him to say that, given his circumstance. The experience of loss, he says, does not need to be the defining moment of our story. And then he says this, the defining moment can be our response to the loss. Your story doesn't have to be about the loss. Your story can be about your response to the loss. In other words, we don't get to decide what roles we play in the story, but we can decide how we play our roles that we're given. And so you reach this point in loss. You reach this point in your story where you just have to decide, is this going to define me? Is my whole life going to be defined about this loss, or is my life going to be defined by my response to this loss? Could God be writing a different story? Could God bring peace in spite of these circumstances? I've had a plaque in my home office for many years. It was handmade for me by an 81-year-old widow many years ago when I was going through my Blue Christmas experience. She took some dried leaves and some flowers, put them in a, mounted them on a little piece of art cardboard or something about this size, put it in a glass frame, and with her arthritic hand, she wrote in calligraphy just simply this phrase, God will make a way. And to be honest with you, I really wondered at that time, given all I was going through, if God could make a way for me. There were moments where I felt like there was no hope. There were moments of loneliness and isolation and regret and despair. There were times where I felt like God could never use me again and my life's ruined. And it was hard to see any way out. It was hard to see any light at the end of the tunnel. And during that season of my life, somebody gave me a worship tape, a cassette tape. And on the cassette tape, there was a song that I listened to, I bet, thousands of times over and over and over again. And it was simply called God Will Make a Way. And it just said, God will make a way where there seems to be no way. He works in ways we cannot see. He will make a way for me. He will be my guide. Hold me closely to his side. With love and strength for each new day, he will make a way. God will make a way. And you know what? He did.
Why did my Savior come to earth? cross be lifted up because he loved me so.
This is the Christian's Hour, and you've been listening to a message for the season featuring Gene Apple. Gene is the preaching minister of the East Side Christian Church in Southern California. We want to thank Gene for his message, and we also want to thank the A Cappella Company for our music for Christmas. To receive a free copy of today's broadcast, call us at 800-553-6490. That's 800-553-6490. When you call, please leave your name and mailing address, and let us know if you prefer a CD or cassette-taped copy. There's no charge for your copies of our program, but if you're so inclined, we certainly could use both your financial support and your prayer support. You'll find a convenient donation form on our website at thechristianshour.org, thechristianshour.org. Or just drop a check in the mail to the Christian's Hour at Post Office Box 51, Onalaska, Wisconsin, the zip code 54650. That's the Christian's Hour, Post Office Box 51, Onalaska, Wisconsin. The zip code is 54650. To preview or purchase music from the A Cappella Company, you will find their website at acapella.com. I'm Bill McClure, program host for the Christian's Hour, reminding you that our broadcast is heard each week at this time and is a listener-supported program. Here's a great closing Christmas thought from Norman Vincent Peale. He said, "Christmas waves a magic wand over this world, and behold, everything is softer and more beautiful." Merry Christmas from all of us who bring you the Christian's Hour.